This is CliffCentral.com.
The following show was recorded outside studio, and although the sound is not our usual studio sound, you do not want to miss the story and interview that follows. Enjoy. 9 months into living in New York, I missed our friendship deeply. I was never good at long-distance relationships, but there was something about this one that was extra painful. Beyond not being able to play tennis with one of my closest friends, she understood the little quirky things, like my love for doing poetry about random subjects off the top of my head while friends were over. This was the early 2000s, before FaceTime video calls, and the only economical way of speaking to her without literally going broke was to buy a cheap African calling card which would connect us, but with extremely poor sound. In the 10th month of this long, brutally cold winter, I needed help because I was missing her deeply. I needed something to help me through the days when the New York snow was so thick that cars couldn't move even if they wanted to. Days when being stuck in my apartment with the fifth cup of hot chocolate and the chocolate would make my heartache worse. So I called on the artist Dwele. Dwele, at his core, is a neo-soul poet. In 2003, Dwele released an album that would get me through endless inches of snow and endless miles between my partner. Welcome back to the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. I'm your host, Timothy Maurice, and today we'll explore the healing power of music. If the start of the year and the political climate is anything to go by, we'll need faith, meditation, prayer, and the subject of today's show, music, to help us get through 2018. Science has shown music has the power to improve medical outcomes and many therapeutic processes. Oliver Sacks, the extraordinary thinker, has a book, Musicophilia, where he put the healing power of music in the consciousness of the international community, documenting the power of music to address diseases such as Tourette syndrome, Parkinson's, autism, and Alzheimer's. Even with advanced dementia, when powers of memory and language are lost, people still respond to music. Music is used to drive political movements and create deep, transformative bonds across cultures. Many revolutions are marked and motivated by sounds and music. So, while still on holiday on the East Coast in America, near my hometown, I thought I would catch up with my thoroughly gifted cousin, a minister at Oak Ridge First Baptist Church in Oak Ridge, North Carolina, Dr. Derek Webster. But Derek is not just any minister. He holds the dual role of music and leadership minister, leading people in biblical principles, as well as being one of the most extraordinary organists who plays music that heals and elevates spirits. And you'll hear that the science that I speak of around music therapy, Derek has been doing this for a while. Dr. Derek Webster, welcome to the Brain and Brand Show.
Thank you, Tim.
Your first time playing an organ at a church, take us back. When was it? How old were you?
Oh, man, I was 12 years old, and I remember distinctly the time, the place. It was 11 a.m. worship service at Zion Baptist Church in Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Mount Airy, North Carolina. And for those who are not, this is the Bible Belt. For those living in different parts of the world, I know we've got a listenership in South Korea. You may not know about North Carolina, but paint the picture a bit. Tell us a little bit about the city you're in.
Good question. Mount Airy is actually, and they may not know much about North Carolina, but they know this personality, Andy Griffith.
Okay.
That's his hometown.
Okay.
And so if you've ever seen an episode of Andy Griffith,
yeah.
He's got that same kind of setting. It's his hometown, and it was based off of Mount Airy, North Carolina.
Oh, wow, okay.
Up in the mountains, kind of.
And this was your father's church.
Yeah.
Your father's a pastor, the leading pastor. Where's that pressure as an organist being the son of a pastor?
Oh, wow. it's the magnitude. It's a magnitude you really can't explain. It puts a pressure on you before you even know what pressure really is.
Where does the pressure come from? Does it come more from
your parents or from the audience?
To me, definitely the audience, but probably your parents have a little bit to do with it too, because it comes from the inside of through their teaching, and you, there's an expectation on you that you don't really know how you're going to live it out, even where to start or where it's going to take you in, but you just know there's something there, and you have people from without, on the outside are trying to see how you're going to live it out, and you're not even sure yourself.
There was a moment I remember growing up when the rest of us were running after sports, and we all played sports, and then all of a sudden, I mean, you played sports, we played baseball, and we were quite active, but then you kind of disappeared, and you started this sort of a journey and trajectory that led you in a very different path that would kind of bring you where you are today. When did you see that you were headed somewhere different?
That's a great question. I was probably about 11, and again, it was baseball season time, so it was time to sign up at the Y, all of that good stuff. Mm-hmm. And my parents, we had an organ in our house that my mom, and maybe we'll get to this later, but my mom had started taking organ lessons when she was pregnant with me. And when she got pregnant with me, into her pregnancy, she started having some complications. So she stopped taking organ lessons. And so that same organ that she stopped on, I started on in our living room. And I was in there. It's one of those organs that had drum beats on it, and you could make sound. And I was trying to make melodies, didn't know what I was doing. And my parents called me in right during baseball season and said, "Would you want to take piano lessons?" I was like, "Yeah." So I never forget, they got a local musician in the community to start giving me some piano lessons. And
did you take to it immediately? Like when initially during those lessons, what was it like? Were you frustrated? Did you want to be in baseball, or were you happy to be there?
It was kind of twofold. I was happy to be there, but then I had to take the ridicule of my friends as well, because I remember when I guess my coming out party to tell them I was taking piano lessons, I'll never forget, they were like, "You signed up yet for baseball?" I said, "Man, I'm taking piano lessons," and I kind of didn't say the whole word like I did. So they were like, "What?" I said, "Yeah, I'm taking piano lessons." And so they laughed, of course, and I mean, that part of it, because there were a few times I felt kind of embarrassed, you know, like I'm taking piano lessons.
It wasn't the coolest thing.
Sure wasn't.
Isn't it fascinating, though, how everyone that was laughing, they're not playing professional.
Right.
You know what's interesting? I didn't know the story about your mom playing an organ when you were a child. But what I have come across is the science that shows that the music and the whatever a pregnant woman is listening to impacts the brain neural pathways of the child. That's fascinating.
Absolutely.
The first time that you noticed that your music moves someone in a positive way, so when, from the time you were in Mount Airy, when was that?
Well, I have a kind of a funny story on that. The first time I was ever in a worship service at Zion Baptist Church, after taking piano lessons for a few weeks, my dad calls me up to the piano to play. Well, they have an organist, their older lady, Miss Annabelle Overby. I'll never forget as long as I live. And she, of course, she played, had an older style. I could only play in one key. Just a few weeks in, but I was serious about it, I could play in the key of C. And after church was over that day, people were like, you sounded so good, but we got to get with Miss Overby because she was messing us up. And I was like, no, she was playing in the right key. I was playing in the wrong. I didn't know only one key. But I said that to say this, that I saw that people were drawn to something, but I didn't quite know what it was.
Sure.
And I knew then that this could be something if I took the time to develop it, allow God to develop it and put in the training and the time that I needed. And those were some formative years. I'll never forget. I was in Mount Airy not too long ago to visit someone. I just had to go by that church and just sit there and took a picture of it on my cell phone because the memories of it.
Do you remember when you look back, the year that you could have signed up for baseball and you no longer missed it? When was the moment when you're like, screw baseball?
You know, I can't remember the exact time, but I think it's just, I think there were moments that made me think that I didn't really miss what I thought I was missing. Because eventually I went back to play baseball, but my passion had changed.
Shifted.
Yeah, definitely shift in my passion. I found that I could do both, but I didn't want to do both anymore. I was just kind of concentrating on music. And at that time, it wasn't many of us out there, especially, and when I say us guys in particular, that played or could play during a whole worship service or what have you. And so at that time, I was pretty popular around the smaller counties and all of that kind of stuff. And that was another thing that I had to deal with, because with that popularity came a lot of stuff.
Yeah, of course.
You know,
course.
So, but that's neither here nor there right now. But it was a great experience. Great experience.
So I want to go back to when you started to fall in love, you realized you weren't really missing baseball and these other things. You're now, you've discovered a passion of yours, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who did you look up to? Who was a musician that moved you, that when you listened to it, it kind of transformed you a bit?
There were several, but one in particular that sticks out to me, and for a twofold reason. One, because he was a pastor's son like me. His name was Christopher Leak. His dad pastored a church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And Chris never had any formal training. His dad prayed. Chris just started playing, but I just loved the way he played. And
wow.
I don't even think he knows that. I think after this interview, I'll call and tell him. But he really inspired me, because he was somebody I could look to as it related to age-wise. He was a little bit older than me, but kind of in the same age bracket. And it's something about him.
Was there ever a song that you remember that sticks out, that when you think about that song, it was a signature of his, something different about what he played?
Yes. There was a song they used to sing called Show Me Jesus. Show Me the Way.
Wow.
And I'll never forget, after that service that day, I went and I practiced and practiced until I played it just like him.
Really?
I did. And again, I've never told him this, but I think I need to call and tell him.
Wow. You know, from those times of you practicing Show Me Jesus to now, you've experienced some transformational experiences.
Absolutely.
You've seen people, you know, become completely transformed by the power of their faith and music. Music and faith seem to go together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got all these ingredients that come together. One of the things I've experienced is sort of acknowledge whether somebody's in the club or whatever. But whatever you believe, and if there are people around you that are connecting over music, along with some spirit that comes into the space, along with the music is sort of like a fuel, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, how do you see music playing a part with all of these moving ingredients, with people in the space, with messaging and the Bible and faith? How do you see music as a role?
Music, in my opinion, or conviction, music is the appetizer. And sometimes you get a good appetizer, you just stay right there. You don't even want a main meal. Matter of fact, I went to a restaurant the other day and just got appetizers. Music is an appetizer that can really take you there. It can take you to a place that opens you up. Give you a case in point. There was a lady in our ministry that was dealing with the threat of having cancer. And one Sunday, we sang this song that said, I am the Lord that healeth thee. It's a scripture, but put it to music. And she said she knew from that singing that song that she got her healing that day.
Wow.
Went to the doctor the next week, and I can't prove scientifically and say it was because of that song, because, as you said, it was her faith. But that
it was them together.
Right. Music took her faith to a place.
Yes.
And she said, I'm healed, even before I go to the doctor. And today she's cancer-free.
You know what's powerful about that is that it sounds like what you're saying is that, so she has her faith. That's one thing.
Right.
But now she's got this music that's pulling her where she can't necessarily push herself. So the faith and music is kind of a work that's moving, right?
Absolutely.
That's incredible. You're now launching a CD soon. Did you ever think you'd have a CD?
No, absolutely not.
Give us the theme of the CD. What is the CD about?
Well, the CD is actually it's going to be a series of songs that kind of some new vibe out there, but mostly the old, some old.
Soulful, gravity type.
Matter of fact, my mom is featured on my CD.
Wow.
And what's so powerful about it, and to answer your question, I never saw myself doing a CD. And the reason I got to this place is because everywhere I would go, people would say, "Do you have a CD?" And I'm like, "No, I don't even want a CD. I don't even know how to get started."
Sure.
And so one Sunday, a lady came up to me after a worship service and said to me, "Have you ever thought about doing a CD?" I said, "No, that's not even where I'm trying to go." She said, "Well, you need to," she said, "because there are so many people that are missing your ministry through music." She said, "And me and my husband are going to fund your CD." I literally almost fainted because I'm like, oh my God.
Because it's expensive.
Right. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with this? And from that, people just started coming into my life that had the experience. I'm actually doing mine in a studio, and the person doing with the studio not even charging me studio time.
Wow.
Everything is like falling in place.
Wow.
I mean, you know, it's
Do you have a favorite song on the so far?
Oh man, I don't wanna probably my mama's song.
That's powerful.
And interesting, let me share this with you, Brother Tim. Interesting part of that is that when she recorded, she only did one take and it was perfect.
Wow.
It was perfect to our estimation. And she said, "I always wanted, I never told anybody this," she said, "I always wanted to do something with my son in music." And I was like, wow.
Because in some ways, you and your experience and her experience with you, she basically transferred the gift through sacrifice.
Absolutely.
She had a sacrifice. Absolutely. That's powerful. Studies show people who have surgeries ranging from colonoscopies to knee surgery show accelerated healing and recovery when listening to music. Have you experienced people who come to church after surgery and experience accelerated growth in response to the ministry?
Absolutely. One of the things that one aspect of my ministry is sometimes when I go visit people in hospitals after surgery, but not even before they get to church, they may ask me, and I've had this happen numerous times, to just sing them something. But, you know, in the hospital, it's kind of awkward because you don't want to be loud and boisterous like you are in a public setting,
sure,
like a church or something. And so I might sing something just kind of soft and grab their hand. And it's like you can just feel the transformation going on in their lives.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, man. It's powerful.
There's a growing field called music therapy where people take instruments into the hospital and they do exactly what you're doing.
Absolutely.
So you've been doing music therapy,
right,
all along.
And I didn't even know that's what it was.
Wow.
I'll give you another example too. Our grandmother had Alzheimer's and it was hard on our family because we had never been down that road before with anybody in our family. And one of the songs in the African American tradition that we always used to sing was "It's In My Mind." And so I never forget, I was talking to a few of the family members one day who were having a hard time grasping the fact mom, grandma's got Alzheimer's and we don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And I said, "Guys, listen, one of the things that gives me consolation is when I go see her, before I leave, I'll start singing 'It's In My Mind.'" And here's the thing, she may not be able to articulate what we used to know about her or what she knows about us. But when I was saying that song, it was like a difference would come over her face. It was like she would look at you like, "Yes, it's in my mind. I can't say it through my mouth, but it's in my mind."
And even when I remember there were moments when she didn't recognize it, but she recognized that song.
She recognized that song.
So you're probably one of the last people that she connected with on a level, and that's power. That's deep. You know, it's one of the things that's interesting for me, and I want you to be thinking about this. I got a couple more questions. We're going to wrap this up, but I want you to think about a few songs that people should add to their playlist as things get tough this year. Or as people start to think about, and fortunately now, anybody can download on iTunes. When your music comes out, people will be able to download your music as well. So wherever you are in the world, you'll be able to connect with the playlist he's going to come up with. But just a few songs. Because I'm intrigued by the idea that, like in my early story, how I started it off, whether you're missing someone, whether you're going through surgery, whatever you're experiencing in life, whether you've got a goal and you want to say to yourself, I need some music to help elevate me towards my goal. So whether you're responding to pain or you're trying to go forward, music has that kind of power. So be thinking about that for a moment, okay? So from reducing the side effects to cancer therapy to helping patients recover speech loss, have you considered gospel music's unique therapeutic benefit? I mean, we know that music of all types, from classical music, can help people settle and calm. But the interesting thing about gospel music is that inherently, it has a message.
Absolutely.
So far beyond the music and the notes, tell us what your thoughts are about having this unique fused music with message.
It's something about, and I like all, let me just say, I like all kinds of music, but it's something about gospel music, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's the message behind the music. And again, speaking from an African-American tradition, we are very rhythmic people. That's how we learn. I mean, they used to try to diagnose me in school when I was beating on the table, but I was learning because of that music, and it's just a part of our aura. It's funny to me that sometimes now in our Caucasian brothers and sisters, and our worship styles are so different, because they can come to our church and we can just start off a song and everybody in our congregation just backs it up, and they look at us and they say, how do you all do that? Mm. I mean, you know, there's something, and I'm speaking from that African-American tradition. It's just something in us, inherently in us, that just comes out. It's just overwhelming. Is that because one, when we were in slavery, that's how we would communicate.
Yeah,
we were singing songs on let's go down by the river.
Yeah, to get away from the pain.
Yeah, so to answer your question, that same the same tradition is in us today, because as long as your supervisor is over your shoulder, there ain't much you can do.
Sure.
But when you take a bathroom break, you can go down to the river to the bathroom and just have a little, the message of that song can be ringing in your heart.
You know, you mentioned race, and you know, for those who are listening that are from different backgrounds and different, you know, religions and so forth, you know, there are some unifying effects of music. And I've seen, absolutely, for example, when you connect with, you know, churches from different backgrounds, from different type of faith, from charismatic to white to different types, there seems to be some songs that connect with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of those?
Oh man, probably one of the main songs is something like At the Cross, because it has that central theme. Now, it may be sang with a different tempo,
sure,
but it's got that same...
The message is the same.
And regardless of how you sing it, it's one of those international language songs that people love it because of the message.
Hymns are similar. Amazing Grace,
yeah,
think about some,
yeah,
of those.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how different cultures put the different twist on
right,
it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's the same. One of the things I can't let you go before asking you about this. This is a little bit controversial.
Okay.
I've noticed that, in particular in charismatic churches, just to paint the scene, I'm interviewing you at Oak Ridge First Baptist Church right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Oak Ridge is in South Africa we call it LSM, higher LSM, where the demographics and the income levels are fairly high compared to the median. And so shouting and, you know, dancing in church is, you know, you found people fairly conservative, mm-hmm, when it comes to these type of things. And even if they want to, you can see,
right,
that, you know, I'm a PhD, maybe I should hold it together.
Right.
Have you seen moments where someone, they try to hold it back and then eventually they can't help it anymore and they just let go?
I'll be honest with you, that is one of the most liberating experiences for the onlooker, but not for the person. I've seen that same thing happen. I never forget one Sunday, one of our leaders in the church, he's high echelon, PhD, he was trying his best to hold his peace, but it came on him so bad through the music.
Yeah.
The music just became a part of him, and it's almost like he began to think about how he got to where he is. He was like, you know what? I just can't help it.
Yeah, it's like he drops the BAB, drops all formalities. Like,
forget all of that protocol and all of that stuff. I mean, because I know that it was through this music and this message and all of this put together, and my faith, of course, that I'm where I am, and that was his response.
It's interesting for me because there are moments when you can see in the church when this is happening, when the music is building, there's a certain sort of elevation of spirit that's happening in the collective consciousness of the church. And then all of a sudden, can you tell when it's about to happen? Based on your experience, based on your understanding of music, based on your understanding, your experience, or are you shocked as well when it happens?
I would probably say sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. And I like it better when you can't, because you would think that you could dictate it. And it's one of those things that you don't ever want to dictate to what our God is trying to orchestrate.
In people's lives. Yeah.
Because we're not smart enough to know what's needed at the time.
Sure.
So with that whole music concept, that's why people don't know this, I labor over a worship service on what songs does God want me to present that day. And sometimes it's funny, sometimes the people that work alongside me in the ministry get frustrated because it'll change. It might change as soon as I walk in the service, because I'm so sensitive to what God wants versus the latest song we just learned or what we rehearsed for an hour.
Got it.
You know.
Wow, that's powerful. And that must be really frustrating, because you've got people who come through rehearsals and they're like, look, I came for 2 hours.
Yes.
Have you ever tried to hold back but couldn't hold back
anymore
and then kind of lost it?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's a culmination of things that's all coupled together with this whole concept of music and ministry. I like to say music and ministry. When it comes to, it's almost like, it's raining outside now in Oak Ridge, North Carolina, but it's almost like the atmosphere has to get right. This has to happen. But when the atmosphere gets right, it's going to rain. And it's kind of like that with music and the ministry. When conditions get right, oh man, stuff happens.
I want to paint the picture quite clearly, because I think this is important for those who haven't experienced what we're talking about. We're talking about when, you know, it could be during a sermon, it could be during song or whatever, it could be during where people are sharing messages, where someone gets overwhelmed by emotion and they just kind of lose and they start to express themselves in this sort of spiritual way. What do you call that? For those who have no clue what this is, I've got people listening from Saudi Arabia, all over the world. How do you explain what happens when you just kind of like, you start to either dance or express yourself in this sort of way?
I'll say it's an experience. No one does it the same always. Different cultures. Some people cry. Some people laugh.
Some people just throw their hands up.
Some people just rock from side to side. Some
just run.
Take off running. Yeah, I've seen that happen. It's a varied responses, but you got to do something, because you can't contain it. You can't hold it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's gonna be a response.
You know, it's interesting how if you listen to some of the greatest speeches of all time, when a pastor gets up or any leader gets up to speak, they're orating. They are sharing a message. Sometimes it's well structured, well scripted. But in the African American tradition, particularly here at Oak Ridge, there is a moment where alongside the message that he's giving, a pastor, in this case your father, is giving, music comes in. Why?
That's our response. Again, I keep saying response. One of the worst things you can do is have a great orator, give a great speech, sermon, or whatever, and have the wrong response in music. They go together. I think that's why the songs are so powerful, because the songs are about music and the message. You know, David was one of the greatest musicians there was. And when he talks about, in particular, the 23rd Psalm, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. And, you know, and you think about those green pastures, and it's just a rhythmic time when God is collaborating through music and message, word and message, and putting it all together and changing lives.
But how do you know when to come in?
Now that's something you can't teach. I'll give you a story about that. When I was taking piano lessons, I used to ask my piano teacher. He would say to me, I would go to practice, and I say, I want to do what you do. He said, oh, it'll be years and years and years before you do that, before you know how to do that. And so as soon as he would turn his back, I would be playing what he was playing. Sometimes I hate to say it, but better than he was. But,
oh, wow.
But I would be playing it, and he would say, how'd you learn how to do that? Because one, and this is what I tell people who want to learn music, first of all, it has to be a part of you. If you're not in tune and you don't have any kind of, if you're not rhythmic, if you will, if you're not musically inclined, I would say find something else to do. but music has to be a part of your life. And growing up in my home on Saturdays, we cleaned up. My mom played all kinds of music, from Aretha Franklin to James Cleveland. From the Temptations to the Commodores. I mean,
literally before you were born.
Yes, music. Music has always been.
Before you give us this list, playlist to help us get through the year, music also has a magnetic power. And for any musician, I can imagine that, you know, especially for a young boy, going back to when we started this conversation, that as a teenager, it must have been quite complex having this sort of force where people were drawn to you, and you probably I'm sure no one is teaching you, like, you know what, when you get 17, girls are come flocking towards you, and we can't really explain why, but you have this magnetic thing and you've got a great personality. Why do you think people are so drawn to musicians?
Varied reasons. I think the main thing is they feel like, sometimes people feel like that it's the main thing. And if I can get in the mix of the main, then I'm on target. I think because it looks intriguing and it looks like it takes you to another place.
But think about this for a second. Musicians on literally every genre, there will be people who shake and faint at the sight of a musician, their favorite artist. You remember the scenes of people seeing Michael Jackson and just passing out.
Right.
You know, so you take a musician inside of a church type of ministry, you got an added dimension of power and influence.
Well, absolutely.
Have you ever, when was the first time you realized that people are drawn to something in me that's even beyond me?
I think it goes back to when I told you the first time I played, and it's like anything else. And you grow older because you don't understand everything about what it is that you have. But I think you have to, as you get older, you put it in perspective. And you even go through those times, those years when you're a little bit immature with it. And, you know, it's like you think it's about you. But then you quickly learn that you can't uphold yourself on that level. There has to be some undergirding,
sure,
if you will. Because there have been some negative times. Some negatives that have gone along with growing in this thing and putting it all in perspective, because if you're not careful, you can find yourself manipulating through your music rather than allowing the music to be pure and honest and from a good heart.
Well, was there a specific time you can remember where the power overwhelmed you, where you made a mistake because you had too much power and you had to be humbled?
Absolutely. Actually, to a point. That is a particular time in my life when actually my pastor took me off the organ for a season because I needed to grow wisdom wise to where I was talent wise.
Oh wow, your talent and your wisdom had to align.
Oh, it had to align.
You see that in all kinds of sports as well. You see someone who's really talented but they don't have the discipline,
right,
and they collapse.
Right.
Break us down. Give us the list.
Oh, man. Some of my favorites.
Hope you got your notes. Write this down.
One of my favorite songs is, and this song has been found to minister to people that are not even Christian, is Jesus, You're the Center of My Joy.
How does that go?
I said, Jesus, you're the center of my joy by Richard Smallwood. Okay. And another song he has is Total Praise. Now, that doesn't really mention a lot about Jesus, but it, when you in our previous conversation, it takes you to just like a total place of where you just in surrender to the Almighty.
Wow. So those are two?
That's two that I love. I'm going to tell you one that I really love, and people laugh when I tell them this, is I Believe I Can Fly. I love that song.
And it's by
R. Kelly. I love that
it's
song.
It's a powerful song. I
mean, powerful song.
I Believe I Can Fly. If you think about the lyrics, I believe I can touch the sky.
Touch the sky.
And then think about the messaging. I think about it
every night and day.
I spread my wings.
I fly away.
Wow.
I believe I can soar. See me running through
that open door.
Open door. I believe I can fly. Love that song.
Derek Webster, thank you for joining us on the Brain and Brand.
Thank you so much, Tim.
I've experienced the power of music throughout my life, from my favorite playlist while running in a gym to those crazy days when work seemed intent on punishing me.
I used to think that I could not go on, and life was nothing but an awful song. But now I know the meaning of true love. I'm leaning on the everlasting love.
This playlist that Derek has added, find your own playlist as well that can heal you and give you some biological benefits throughout the rest of this year. We'll be back next week with the next episode of the Brain and Brand Show. Continue sharing and subscribing, and remember to rate the show.
This is CliffCentral.com.